Why don't we go ahead and convene? Good morning, everybody. This is the August 7th, 2024 morning session of the Portland City Council. Please call the roll.
Good morning. Gonzalez.
Here.
Maps.
Here.
Rubio. Here. Ryan.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. Now we're going to hear from legal counsel on the rules of order and decorum. Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor.
Thank you.
Welcome to Portland City Council. It's my court counsel. First, actually, you must sign up in advance.
Is your mic on? Can you confirm? There. Now I can hear it now.
Can you hear it now?
Yep. Right. Now it's on.
We'll start again.
Thanks.
Welcome to the City of Portland City Council. To testify before council in person or virtually, you must sign up in advance on the council agenda at www.portland.gov/council/agenda. Information on engaging with council can be found on the council clerk's webpage. Individuals may testify for 3 minutes unless the presiding officer states otherwise. Your microphone will be muted when your time is over. The presiding officer preserves order. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If you cause a disruption, a warning will be given. Further disruption will result in ejection from the meeting. Anyone who fails to leave once ejected is subject to arrest for trespass. Additionally, council may take a short recess and reconvene virtually. Your testimony should address the matter being considered. When testifying, state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. If you are a lobbyist, identify the organization you represent. Virtual testifiers should unmute themselves when the council clerk calls your name. Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot. And just before we jump into business, on a personal note, all of you know that Megan Lehman has served me very, very loyally over a course of several years as my officer here in council meetings. And I want to give her a shout out today because it is probably going to be her last day here at City Council before she goes out on maternity leave. And so we just want to congratulate you and wish you the very, very best. And thank you for the great work that you do. And of course, we'll see you when you get back.
Thank you.
All right, with that, we'll go right into communications. First individual, please, number 698.
Request of Hillary Gray to address council regarding the importance of safe bicycle infrastructure for seniors.
Good morning, Hillary. Welcome. Thanks for being here today.
That's 706.
Morning.
Traffic.
Okay.
This is.
Good morning, City Council members and Mayor. My name is Hillary Gray. I am a senior citizen that has recently returned to the world of bicycling after over 40 years. Portland bike culture is amazing. It embraces many of the values that are on the top of my personal list for successful aging. Benefits for seniors like me: exercise, my e-bike allows me to ride without excessive fatigue, enjoying fresh air, trees, and the neighbor's plants. Social life. We have all read about how loneliness and social isolation are risk factors for aging individuals. Since I started going on rides with my family, my neighbors, and believe it or not, Petapalooza rides, I experienced joy and a feeling of inclusiveness. Climate sensitivity. Each time I take my bike, instead of driving, I reduce emissions and I encourage others to ride with me instead of driving when possible. My ask of you as our representatives, please put a high value on bicycle infrastructure and maintenance. I need the greenways and bike lanes to be kept clear and free of debris, and potholes to be filled to stay safe. As the upcoming updates on Sandy Boulevard and Northeast Broadway begin, think of creating a safe environment for cyclists, walkers, and mobility device users. This is your chance to make a street that I personally have been avoiding due to fear of being hit into a great way to get to the many businesses, services, and across town access that would make all of our lives better. Thank you.
Thank you. And first of all, thank you for coming in. And you're right, obviously. And I also just want to congratulate you for dipping your toes back in the water. It looks like you're having fun with it.
I am.
I'm glad to hear that. It's a good and inspiring example for all of us. So thank you.
Thank you.
Next, I noticed the next four individuals have the same agenda. Do they want to come up together? Or individually? Yes, together? Okay, yes. I'm seeing Rob say yes. So why don't you call the next four, please?
Item 699, request of Rob Martineau to address council regarding American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Local 189 successor negotiations. Item 700, request of Ira Bailey to address council regarding American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Local 189 successor negotiations. Item 701, request of Alex Piero to address council regarding American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Local 189 successor negotiations. And item 702, request of Chuck Barnes to address council regarding American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Local 189 successor negotiations.
Thank you all for being here.
Thank you. Rob Martineau, I am a city employee for years and a leader in my union for the last 12. I'm here to talk about some urgency in our contract negotiations. I want to recognize both the members and leaders beside me and behind me as we brought a small contingent of our over 1,000 members that serve this city in critical services in across many bureaus, water, BDS, revenue, police. We provide the critical services that keep the city running and provide that livability. As we're entering negotiations and reaching the economics portion of that, again, the city is messaging no money, that there's no money to take care of employees, of infrastructure, of all of the things that our city so critically needs. And what we feel is we have less of a money issue, but a choices issue. We repeatedly choose to not invest in city employees who keep the city running. These choices are unsustainable and it needs to change. This council has an obligation to pass labor peace to the next council. This agreement expires on December 31st and we need to address this with some urgency so that the city can have stability moving into our new form of government. We're asking to be treated fairly. We deserve parity. Our contract lacks equity and equality, and our platform is simple. We want compensation and benefits that support our ability to not just live, but thrive in the communities we serve. Incentives and protection and flexibility to support our individual needs, whether we work in person, telework, or in the field. And to address the trauma we experience in our workplace, including during inclement weather. We've spent the last few weeks out having conversations with our membership. This is what they are interested in. This is what they demand to continue to serve the city. What we have here today is a petition of over 700 people who have signed that they support this bargaining team. This city has not sought labor peace with us. We demand that we find agreement. We are tired of an employer that only seems to understand contract grievances, unfair labor practices, and adverse decisions to the city of administrative law judges and the Employment Relations Board. Every fight doesn't need to be a court fight. And I'm imploring this council to find a way to empower your negotiators at the table to treat us fairly, provide stability to the city, and get us into this next form of government with labor peace. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob.
Good morning. My name is Stephanie Romine. I am a member of the AFSCME bargaining team and have worked for 20 years as an identification technician with the Portland Police Bureau. My primary job function is to fingerprint and identify by fingerprints every inmate coming through the maximum security jail in the Justice Center. As a group, we are highly skilled, trained, and certified in our field. Since the act of fingerprinting an individual requires prolonged physical contact and close proximity, we are vulnerable and face the same physical threats and potential confrontations that police officers and corrections deputies do. We have observed the same depravities of human behavior, interacted with the same violent offenders, and have had a front row seat to all the city can offer in the form of despair. We have protected ourselves without weapons or self-defense training and have individually learned how to process this information without any training in trauma or de-escalation like our sworn coworkers. Through this position, I have been afforded a unique perspective that many won't attain. As essential personnel, we show up and perform our duties regardless of how extreme the circumstances. During COVID, we reported to work as usual with only a paper mask and gloves provided us protection. During the last storm in January 2024, we staffed our office in the jail despite the building being without heat for 5 days. Technicians have paid out of their pocket to stay at downtown hotels to ensure we make it back to work for our shifts. Perhaps most notable were the protests of 2020. Although all other non-sworn employees in the building had been removed to remote locations, we are tied to the jail, so we remained. I cannot convey what it does to a person's psyche to report to work for 200 days while your building is being assaulted and when it feels like nobody knows or cares that you exist. We were harassed, held after our shift ended, were in the building as rioters attempted to light the building on fire, and were exposed to nightly screaming, chanting, firebombs, explosions, pepper spray, and tear gas. In short, we felt left behind by our city. Our employment with the city has taken an emotional and physical toll. It has changed us as people. These experiences are not limited to ID techs. PBOT parking enforcement, for example, faces many of the same physical threats and emotional trauma that ID techs do. They are consistently harassed, verbally threatened, and chased. They have had weapons pulled on them, have had people show up to their homes, and have been forced to de-escalate situations that could very quickly turn violent. They have also been left to deal with the collateral damage on their own. When I joined the bargaining team, one of the tenets of our platform struck a nerve with me. It states that our union is looking to address trauma and safety in the workplace, including during inclement weather. This is the most basic of expectations. In exchange for the employee's time and commitment, the employer has a responsibility to provide a secure and safe work environment under reasonable conditions. If those conditions extend beyond the reasonable, employees should be compensated for the level of risk we assume. From my perspective, the employees of this city have upheld our side of the contract while the city has broken theirs. People that choose employment with the city usually do so because they have a vested interest in their community. We are the city's biggest supporters, but we have been treated with indifference by city leadership. The city has indicated that they will turn a blind eye to the very people who have made and can return the city to the shining beacon it once was. AFSCME is the largest union of city workers, and we come to ask you to reinvest in our contract, both written and understood. We ask you to reestablish your relationship with the labor force and realize that it is the workers who make this city function. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Morning.
Greetings, Alex Piero. I'm a public works construction inspector with PBOT for 6 years, I guess the least tenured thus far of our panel. Also the organizer with AFSCME Local 189. Following up on kind of what Steph and Rob were saying about us being the sort of constant in this city, us, despite all the change through everything that's happened over the past couple of years, we are the ones who've continued to make this city work. So today marks the culmination of a campaign in which we collected signatures, as Rob mentioned, from an overwhelming majority of our membership. I want to speak a little bit to what it took to collect those signatures. Countless meetings at work sites, you know, in this sort of post-COVID environment, and everything is more spread out. It's much more difficult to reach people on many levels. But from Interstate Water at 5:30 a.m. to the Justice Center at their 2 p.m. shift change, to all the many smaller sites throughout the work, throughout the city, where the work of the City of Portland is done, we were there, talking to members, gathering their stories, hearing their issues, and bringing them here to you. The one thing that we did find that remained constant through all of this was the dedication, the drive, and the commitment to keeping the city running in the face of constant change and challenge. Again, the one thing I really want to speak to today is the nature of that consistency. And through all the changes, including here among council with a new form of government, new mayor, essentially a whole new slate of bosses that we're going to be facing next year, we are the constant who remain and who will remain. We're the ones with the skill, the ability. We are the ones who hold the institutional knowledge of how to keep this city running despite all this change. In the 6 years I've been with PBOT, I have seen 3 bureau directors, 2 reorganizations, and countless changes in leadership. Throughout all these changes, we're the ones who've shown up every day to keep performing the work, oftentimes training our new bosses as they show up on the job. If there is indeed a city that works, it is us. If we are forced out due to rising cost of living, due to low morale, or better wages and other employment, the city loses its memory, its skill, and its ability to perform its essential work. If there's a place that needs investment, it is in us. We are Portland. We are the city that works. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Thank you. My name is Chuck Barnes, and I'm a business systems analyst with the Division of Urban Forestry and the Bureau of Parks and Recreation. I'm also a union steward for Ask Me Local 189, and I'm also a captain of the membership action team that collected the signatures that you received this morning in support of our union's bargaining platform. I've worked for the city for almost 2 years. It's my first government job and my first experience being in a union. I'm grateful to have a great job and a great manager, and I'm grateful to Ask Me 189 for representing me and my colleagues in collective bargaining. In urban forestry, we recognize that trees are the essential green infrastructure that makes Portland healthier, safer, and more pleasant. And I think of my union colleagues as the essential human infrastructure that makes Portland a better place for all of us to live, work, and play. Our local 189 represents over 1,000 workers in over 130 job classifications. And here are just a few of the jobs that we do. We are your code specialists, office support specialists, concrete finishers, accountants, carpenters, construction equipment operators, housing loan coordinators, evidence control specialists, parking code enforcement officers, police internal affairs investigators, water quality inspectors, plans examiners, parks technicians, and revenue and tax specialists, among many others. I speak on behalf of our members who overwhelmingly support our bargaining platform, which addresses three main points that you've already heard, but which I will reiterate. Compensation and benefits that support our ability to not just live in, but to thrive in the communities we serve. Incentives, protection, and flexibility to support our individual needs, whether we are working in city facilities, in the field, or remotely. And addressing workplace trauma and safety, including during inclement weather or when interacting with hostile members of the public. We really hope that the council supports ASB 189's efforts to settle a fair contract. We are all partners in creating and maintaining the best Portland possible. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you. We can't speak to the contract here, but we will pass this on to our labor negotiations team. And I just want to say personally and generally, I appreciate public employees more than ever today, because public employees have been under attack, not just here at the city of Portland, but at every level of government. The public has been trained, if you will, to blame public employees for the problems in our community. And that is not fair. And I also want to acknowledge that when COVID struck, 60% of our workforce was on the job each and every day, even while the rest of the economy was shut down. You guys showed up at a time when, frankly, there were deep concerns about personal health in that environment, and you were there. And you mentioned some of the trauma that one experiences being a public employee, working in a jail environment, for example. I don't think the public always understands or appreciates the environment in which public employees frequently work. But it's often the hard jobs, it's often the dirty jobs, it is often the dangerous jobs. That's what public employees do. And so my hope for the future is that the public sees again the value of public employees in our community, and that young people strive to be public servants in the true spirit of what public service means. Because I won't have many more chances to say this, I just want to say I've appreciated my relationship with our labor partners, and I look forward to a very, very bright future. I will be watching from the sidelines, but I appreciate the work you all do, and I thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
And Commissioner Rubio had a comment as well.
I just wanted to say thank you also for coming to speak. I think this is important to say in the public realm and for all of us to hear. I also really believe that our city is only as effective as our employees are cared for and respected and also heard. So again, just want to appreciate that. I do have a quick question though. Rob, when you were talking specifically about that, we don't want to always end up at the NLRB. We don't always want to end up, you know, in grievance territory or arbitration or all these things. What are the ideals or where are there other places that you know of or different ways to do things? And I know that our city isn't the same as any other city. We all have our distinct uniqueness, but high level, what are some things for us to think about?
I think that the city picks the wrong fights. We're 9-1 in these type of rulings. It's frankly embarrassing that the city's legal advice results in our union batting 900. How is that possible? The information is out there. The cases are made. The testimony that happens is in relation to evidence that's already been exchanged. The fact that we choose to fight tooth and nail to the nth degree is absurd. It costs the city money to go lose, and then it costs more. And that, when we say we're broke, we don't, why are we spending money on things like this? Like, let's find agreement. I repeatedly hear that we're labor partners, but what we really are is stakeholders, and we're forced to drive that stake deeper into the ground every single day. We have to fight to stay where we belong. We want to be treated like partners. We want a fair contract that takes care of our employees, all of us, before the next form of government takes power.
Thank you, Rob. Commissioner Ryan. I appreciate what I just heard from you, Commissioner Rubio, in that exchange. There's a lot of people here. Before you leave, could you just all stand so we can see how many of you showed up today? Okay, thank you so much for taking your time. Thank you. That's a lot. Great.
I'll leave the copy of the signatures and petition with the clerk.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah. Thanks all.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. All right, to the consent agenda, I understand that one item has been pulled off consent for further discussion.
Item 707.
All right, please call the roll on the remainder of the consent agenda.
Gonzalez.
Aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Rubio. Ryan.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The consent agenda is adopted. We'll move to the first time certain item, please.
Item 7-1-3
and 1-4, please, together.
The AM meeting time certain is item
703. I apologize. Thank you.
Amend towing and disposition of vehicles code to expand tow authority and define lawful possession of an impounded vehicle.
Thank you. I'll pass this to Priya Dhanapal, DCA for Public Works, to give us a brief presentation on these code amendments. Welcome, Priya. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Mayor. Good morning, Mayor and Council. I'm Priya Dhanapal, DCA for Public Works Service Area. Today, we are reviewing an ordinance to amend the towing and disposition of vehicle code. These amendments address the pressing issue of abandoned vehicles in Portland and include four key changes. I want to express my gratitude to Commissioner Maps and his office for the leadership, and to PBOT and Portland Solutions staff for the collaboration on these amendments. These changes will enhance safety, improve customer service, and reduce response times to community calls and help recover costs. I will now turn it over to Tim Moore, PBOT towing coordinator, for a detailed presentation on these proposed changes. Skylar Brockner-Nell, Director of Portland Solutions, and Jackson Paul, Policy Advisor to Commissioner Maps, are also here to address any questions.
Good morning. My name is Timothy Moore. I'm the City of Portland Towing Coordinator with PBOT. I'm going to go ahead and share this presentation. All right. As DCA Dhanapal mentioned, we're here to discuss the Title 1630 code amendments. There are four proposed changes to the city code that we're discussing today. The first is to extend authority of city staff to independently request tows. The second is to expand authority to tow vehicles with no visible identification. The third is requiring proof of valid driver's license, vehicle insurance, and proof of registration to release a vehicle that's been impounded, and the fourth is to add authority to recover towing, storage, and demolition expenses from registered owners when the city is incurring those costs. A little bit more detail on each of these. The first is to add the authority for PS, Water Bureau, and Portland Maintenance Supervisors to the list of staff who are authorized to request TOWs. This is specifically around emergency management and right-of-way management. So when we have these teams out in the field currently and they are needing to access vital infrastructure, they're required to call parking enforcement or police to request those TOWs to move vehicles when they need that access to that infrastructure. This obviously is a drain on the resources of PBOT parking enforcement and police when they should be out there doing their assigned duties. And it makes it increases the response time for things like emergency access and things like that. So it's an important change to give these authorities this authorization to these staff. We'd also recommend that we include Portland Parks and Rec on this list of supervisors. The next change is towing vehicles without identification. We've seen a large increase, especially since the pandemic, of vehicles on our street and in our right of way without VINs displayed or VINs obscured in some way, and with vehicle plates removed or some sort of fake plate or something. So this rule would allow parking enforcement to include a citation and have that vehicle towed and impounded at the vehicle owner's expense. This is a authority that Portland police already have, but since parking enforcement are the folks who are really out there on a daily basis managing our right of way, this is an important change as well. The third change we're recommending is a required is the requirements to recover a vehicle and the documents that we would require. So currently there's a little bit of latitude and unclarity. It's not clear in our code what's required. And so our tow contractors rely on state law and their own discretion. We'd like to change that and make it so that when a vehicle that has been impounded as a result of a city request, that that vehicle would have to, the vehicle owner would have to show registration, proof of insurance, and valid driver's license in order to drive that vehicle off of the lot. And I do want to be clear that it's about driving the vehicle off a lot. If there's a vehicle that is not running or not able to be driven, that individual would be able to tow that vehicle off the lot without all this documentation. But specifically, when we're releasing vehicles that are going to be operated on our streets and in our right-of-ways, we think this is another extremely important change to improve public safety and increase compliance with DMV requirements. The last change we have listed here is to create a pathway for cost recovery, specifically around abandoned vehicles. This includes mostly abandoned RVs, boats, and trailers that are becoming, again, an increasing issue in our city. The current methodology is to tow those vehicles at the city's expense, to sit on those vehicles until provide notice, and then to any registered owner or party of interest, and then dismantle those vehicles again at the city's expense. To dismantle a vehicle is costing the city $87 a linear foot currently. And so at the end of the day, the average cost of towing and disposing some of these vehicles is somewhere between $2,000 and $3,000 per unit. That's a massive expense that the city has no pathway right now to recover those costs. And so this would allow the city to, with proper notice, pursue compensation from interested parties or registered owners of those vehicles that end up in the city impound or end up in a city dismantling facility. So those are the four changes that we're proposing and hope to get support on. And that's all I have. Thank you very much.
Very good. And we have Skylar and Jackson here to answer any questions. While they're coming up, I would also like to put an amendment on the table before we hear public testimony. This has been requested. I move to amend Directive A to add Park Ranger Supervisor to the list of officers authorized by the City Council or by City Code who may order a vehicle towed or relocated as provided in this title.
I'll second that.
I have a second. Great. we'll go ahead and leave this amendment on the table if we could. Commissioner Mapps,
Sure. And Mr. Mayor, I have an amendment which I'd like to bring forward. Sure. I think I have reached out to all the council offices in advance and given you a copy of this amendment. And at an intuitive level, basically, I propose that we make this an emergency ordinance so we can move forward right away. As we all know, if you drive around Portland, there's a lot of work in the space that needs to be done. The specific language of the amendment that I propose goes in section two. The council declares that an emergency exists because a delay in passing this ordinance will limit staff's ability to immediately maintain the right of way. Therefore, this ordinance shall be in full force and effect from after its passage by council. May I get a second?
Second. Second by Commissioner Gonzalez, and we'll leave this one open as well, if that's all right, Commissioner. Is there any more to the presentation before we go to public testimony on this item? Any questions that we'd like to ask staff prior to public testimony?
Yes, I have a question. Yeah,
Commissioner Gonzalez and Commissioner Ryan.
Is that the right order?
Yeah, I'm just looking at the raised hand, sorry.
Just really excited about this. I think this is going to make some real impacts. I want to focus in on one point about who we provide notice to, registered owners and interested parties when it comes to the dismantling pathway. So as I understand it from law enforcement, one of the big problems here is we have a lot of boats and RVs that are sold on the secondary market or given away, and they just kind of fall off the grid. I mean, and we're seeing a lot of those show up in the Selwood Navy or, you know, on Foster Road. And so just walk me through the mechanics of that. We tow an RV on Foster Road, doesn't have tags, doesn't have a license plate. We go through the 30-day period, and then we're entitled under this code language to dismantle the RV. Are we providing notice to the last registered owner of the RV in that case? And are we envisioning that we will collect that dismantle, you know, that fee or our cost for towing and dismantling from the last registered owner of the RV?
So yeah, great question, Commissioner. So I think The way we understand the system right now is we are recovering none of these costs. I think as we envision the system moving forward, there is absolutely still room for those operating that system to move laterally, either to understand that someone who is the last registered owner is in a difficult financial situation. We're certainly not trying to saddle anybody with any additional costs that they can't afford. What we're seeing right now is a little bit of a, so we call it a gray market, if you would, of vehicles making their way onto Portland streets. That's something we're diving into the data of right now, really trying to understand where these vehicles are coming from. Are they all originating within the city of Portland, outlying counties, other states? That's really, we're trying to understand what's feeding this issue at a core level. And then one of the things that we're really leaning into is, I'll give an example. So we'll say grandfather passes away. He's got an old Winnebago in his backyard,
yep,
costing, you know, as Tim said, about $87 a linear foot, around $2,500 to $3,000 for an individual to take that to a facility and get that dismantled. One thing that we've heard anecdotally is that we're seeing a lot of folks actually just drive their vehicles out to a nearby camp, set the keys on the dashboard, open the door, and walk away. And what we're seeing there is really folks sort of stepping aside from their responsibility to properly dispose of their vehicle and really using the unhoused population on Portland streets as a means to funnel those costs over to the city. And so right now, as I said, we're not recovering any of these costs. This is really just a mechanism for us to start to recover some of those costs from parties who are engaging in poor faith.
I would just encourage us to think about what the communication plan is going to be on this piece to Portland residents.
Absolutely.
You know, there's clearly some bad actors and irresponsible actors in this space. There are also going to be people who just don't know. And how we deal with the first group effectively and not overly negatively impact the second group, I know that's the art sometimes of this type of policy. Again, I'm fully supportive of the mechanism. I hope we actually do recover from some of the bad actors here. But I just would encourage us to think about the communication plan on this. Again, for both RV and boats, I think it's a similar issue on,
could not agree more.
On both sides. So thank you. I'm good for now.
Commissioner Ryan.
Yes. First of all, thank you for the amendment. We were looking, reaching out for that. I don't have it in writing, so I couldn't exactly hear what was said about including parks. Did it mention the entire rangers have the authority?
I think it's park supervisors.
Park supervisors?
Ranger supervisors.
And then it can empower their employees since
they're
only a few supervisors. So if we wanted to make this actionable, can rangers who aren't supervisors?
So that is a good question. I think the final sign-off authority on that is going to live with the supervisors, and that's the same with PBOT maintenance ops, which is included in our amendments here. Uh-huh. So maintenance operations as well as supervisors for BES and water.
Okay. I'm good with the emergency, but I found this to be pretty, like, we haven't had a lot of conversation about it. And since we've just, in this new form of government, even though it's not official yet, we're in it. And so there hasn't been a lot of dialogue with the, you know, person who was just most recently the Parks Commissioner. So I just wanted to get more information.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And so I'm a little bit, it's fuzzy to me on how this is going to be actionable.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
If I may, Commissioner Ryan, I apologize. I apologize if it seems like this is moving fast, although I do also want to assure you this is a project that folks, or a policy space folks, have been working on for a year, several years that I've been in the saddle. And I, although I think there's some wisdom to making this an emergency ordinance, if you're uncomfortable with it, you could just vote no, then it won't. We could probably work out the emergency ordinance thing if you want more time to process what's going on here.
I'm just having a conversation now because it's the first time I've been able to have one. I want to also start by saying thank you, Commissioner Mapps. We had two commissioners overseeing. Well, I need to look at you for a second for good reason. We had two commissioners overseeing PBOT that did not give this any attention at all. And so I know we're talking about cost recovery, but what Portlanders are really upset about is that we just haven't taken any action on this for a long time. And so I get that we don't have enough staffing. Trust me, we all get it because we hear from our constituents how bad this is for their businesses. We hear from residents who are feel very unsafe. And it's usually in the outer parts of the city, outer north, outer east. And it's been consistent since I've been in office, and it's only gotten actually worse. So we have a pretty good system for tents, but we don't have a good system for vehicles. And so I'm glad that this is on the dais. We're actually talking about it. And so I want to make sure in this moment that we take some time to look at it, not just as cost recovery, but how our Portlanders are experiencing this and how impatient they're getting for all the right reasons. So I wanted to make sure why you're all up here and you've been all working on this for some time, that we have a chance to actually have some dialogue so I can explain it to constituents on what we actually passed today. So that's why I'm asking this question.
Fully and appreciate your
commissioner since yeah. I've been here that's actually addressed this.
I appreciate your praise, and I appreciate your desire to have more conversation about how this will be implemented and how it will change the lives of Portlanders. I'm very confident that this will make Portland better. Indeed, I think we all hear about this issue every day. So I would encourage us to, I have some more comments I want to deliver, but I see that Commissioner Gonzalez has his hand up.
Actually, Commissioner Ryan, can I add a little bit more?
What's that?
I just wanted to add a little bit more. So the addition of park staff in this actually came at a little bit of a later date. We were originally looking at expanding this authority just across the public works service area, but it was actually staff from the mayor's office that originally approached us and says, let's look at this from a more one city approach. We have a lot of folks who have eyes on our public spaces, and parks is absolutely a natural compatriot in that sort of workspace. So we can continue to have those conversations. I think we're all for empowering staff at every level to help us get more eyes on the street to solve this problem. I think as Tim stated earlier, waiting for PBOT staff to respond is, let's say, a major slowdown in a lot of aspects of this system. So having parks involved, I think, really just helps us be more effective, more efficient in how we're using our resources. So we're thrilled to have them at the table.
Of course, yes. And this is such a big picture issue. And of course, absolutely. We need bad parks. And today, hearing about this, I'm glad it was pulled off consent and we could actually have dialogue about it. So really, I'm just here to say, are we taking enough time to make sure we get this right? And of course, we're including parks. I just want to make sure on the dais we had a chance to explain this, not just as cost recovery for a bureau. And I know that's not what the intention was, but it's really about what is the problem we're trying to solve.
Could not agree more. Could not agree more.
Commissioner Gonzalez?
Yes. I first of all, as a general matter, I echo Commissioner Ryan's comments in two ways. Deeply, deeply appreciative of you and your team in confronting this issue that has been killing us as a city in recent years, and to do it with urgency. I guess my second editorial here is in this stub period until the end of the year, the space for more deliberate interaction as a legislative body, I don't think we've really built the muscle yet for how this should work. And it's more of an editorial. It's more than just this. It is, you know, traditionally a commissioner bringing forth something that their bureau oversees. We had a mechanism, we had traditions and how you engage with other offices. We're kind of in this weird in-between period. And I would just submit this might have lent itself to a future committee to really build it out and have a chance for a certain type of dialogue. I don't have a substantive critique. I like what you proposed here. It's addressing a crucial issue, but it's just sort of echoing Commissioner Ryan's office about how we can engage on these things in a meaningful way. I think we're just in a strange period right now. I don't have a clear prescription on how to fix it, but we're stuck between the old way and what the new way is going to be on the legislative. And there's some awkwardness to how those things proceed. Now I'll leave it at that.
Sure. And I appreciate that. And I'll tell you, you know, my office has been working on this for years, and, you know, we get here today and I don't even have a speaking role, really. This is an odd transition. I'll tell you, this is work that I'm really proud of, though. And I have my hand up at this moment because before this panel before us goes away, I really wanted to take a moment to acknowledge them. The disposition of inappropriately registered or inappropriately parked vehicles is not sexy, but certainly impacts practically every corner of the city. It's something which has a big impact on the safety of our streets. It's actually a very complicated space to unpack. I will tell you, even before I was in the employment of the city, back when I was working out in Park Rose, this point almost a decade ago, I was in deep dialogue with, frankly, the police bureau around changing policy around what do we do with abandoned RVs. Very, very challenging space. And I'll tell you, with the ordinance that's before us today, we're making more progress in this space than I can't imagine the last time, maybe since we actually set up this code. It might literally be true. And the reason why we made progress here is because of the people before us. The mayor's office has been a great partner. City attorney's office has been a great partner. Rhea has stepped into this conversation probably 37 days ago or something like that, and is really landing, I think, a truly transformative piece of public policy. And I got to just take a moment and really recognize Jackson on my team. He's just been an incredible policymaker and leader in the space. Just so proud of all of you, and really glad to have been part of it.
Thank you. Commissioner Ryan.
I'd just like to hear more details on this. To me, is impact reduction.
Of course.
So when you look at the impact reduction maps that Lucas and his team have been working on for some time, it's really improved over the last 2 years, but at least the public can see what's happening. What they see is with our impact reduction around unsanctioned camps with tents, there's a flow that's fairly seasoned, and there's a team that's large enough to have some impact. And what I think we're having a conversation about is we don't have that parallel consistency on the issue of vehicles. And so I wanted to make sure that was part of our conversation today, because that seems to be the problem we're trying to solve, correct? Try to build from that point so I can just feel better as a legislator that that's what we're moving here.
Absolutely. Thank you for raising that, Commissioner. I think that is top of mind for Portland Solutions staff, and I know the mayor as well. And we're working with Jackson kind of on continued changes. I think this, to Commissioner Mapp's point, is a huge step forward, and we're really excited about it. It's not the final step. And so we're also still working on policy changes, as well as even this morning talking with Metro about their costs for fees for how to properly destroy kind of these vehicles and RVs and why that's become such a hindrance to this community in general. So working with them and then also bringing something forward to the state legislature for state code changes, which I think can be really helpful. So to Commissioner Gonzalez's point, I think there will be further opportunities in the next 6 months, also the next year for the next council, the next mayor to understand maybe some positive changes that could make it resemble a little bit more of that working that we've created within the impact reduction program and Lucas's team. So I'll just say quickly, the scale is completely different in terms of our resources. So Lucas's team is humming along really well. We do about 100 to 150 camp removals a week, but those are tents. And so for RVs specifically, we've towed just over 300 RVs since January. And Mike and his team, and he's here, does an incredible job with very few individuals on his team. So he's got about 8 people right now. They're increasing that a little bit. But Lucas has about 40 teams of 3 that are contractors. And so that's just a completely different scale of resources in terms of staff time. I'm also talking with the city attorney's office on some specific additional code changes that could lend to some of those efficiency creation within kind of the tagging and towing and property storage that we currently engage in for RVs and abandoned autos, and trying to create a few more efficiencies that actually streamline that process. So there are a lot more conversations to have on this point, but I think what we're trying to do is emulate some of the learnings from Lucas and his team and what we've been able to do to create a really efficient system. I'll just say we get complaints and reports every day. And a lot of those sites have cars and RVs because we're just delayed in terms of our schedule. We can get out to assess and post different campsites that don't have vehicles and RVs right away. And we just really have to wait right now on a lot of the sites with cars and RVs. So our goal is to really integrate those systems and create the same kind of resource allocation. I know I've been an advocate in the last year to really get some increased funding for Mike and his team. And then we've really tried to supplement with the Street Services Coordination Center to help him and his team actually accomplish just a faster clip, basically, in their work. They've also gotten a lot of help from the police bureau. So I just want to shout out the neighborhood response team officers that go with them to make sure they're safe when they're doing this tagging and towing, because it can be really dangerous too.
But the intent of this is to not quickly address that problem by adding more FTE to this service area, to this we are.
Absolutely, yes. So part of the, I believe we came out for 22 new enforcement staff for parking enforcement for this fiscal year. We're currently hiring into those positions. A certain portion of those are dedicated to, it was called VIT, vehicle investigation. And anytime we're up talking about this, I always want to make sure that we shout out the folks who have been doing that work. And you mentioned, you know, there can be a difference in how this work is viewed, given who is sitting at the helm of PBOT. Now that we're sort of under a new system, I expect the work and the continued support for that work to be a lot more consistent. And Skylar actually brought up a very interesting point where in the IRP space, a lot of that work is done through outside contractors. And I'd say the real advantage that parking enforcement and VIT bring to the table is that they are city employees. So they are able to go out and on those first visits, having access to our shelter rolls, offering those beds. And I think the way I always refer to them is that PBOT has accidentally built one of the most robust, well-rounded outreach programs that the city has to offer right now, going out and touching base with police involved as well. There's that safety element built in. Our clearing of Northeast 33rd Drive, I think at the end of 2023, I think is an example of how well this system can work when all of those gears mesh together. And working with Skylar and Portland Solutions, I think we have a vision for what that future can look like.
No,
once all those gears.
I appreciate that. And I was on the ground floor working with our team because we built the first safe rest for vehicles. And I really got to see this firsthand. And that's probably why I'm so attached to this topic. And so it really does beg the question then, after the one that we have on Sunderland, there's another one that's opening out in St. John's soon. So the real question is, where do we take these where people are actually in poverty, and that's why they're surviving in these, so they can be housed, can build their agency, you know, get services, and then distinguish that from ones that we get very valid reports that aren't doing that, but are instead a kind of a bricks and mortar system, if you will, for things that we, you know, illegal activities. So that's where the outreach is so important, and we don't know until we actually talk to people. I really appreciate PBOT becoming social workers, in fact, in their outreach efforts. So thank you. And so it's about making sure we take time to understand where we're going with this.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Commissioner.
Commissioner Gonzalez.
I have some follow-up.
When's the next one opening? I think that ended up being a question.
Skylar, why don't you?
So where will we take
end of September, probably. We're pouring asphalt right now. So barring any construction delays, I will say is my caveat.
Commissioner Gonzalez.
I had some factual questions, and it may require you guys just to get back to our office afterwards. So you said we've towed about 300 since the beginning of the year.
RVs, yeah.
Yeah.
Do we have any idea how many of those have or haven't been claimed by the owner? Like, what's the rough approximate of when we tow that we get people, you know, to affirmatively come in and
right.
recover them or not recover and just approximately what we're seeing?
Just off the top of my head, about 5%. About 95% are going to destruction.
That's 5% remarkable.
Get claimed about.
So 1 in 20 is all
very, very small percentage of are actually claimed.
And also just ballpark, the source, the last registered owner of these vehicles, do you have a sense of what percentage are Portland residents versus elsewhere? And if you, I'm just curious off the cuff, and then I'd love it if you could maybe.
Off the top of my head, I would say mostly Portland.
Mostly Portland.
Okay. You know, I would think mostly Portland. I can do some digging on that. We haven't dug much because, I'll be frank with you, is we haven't had that opportunity to go back and hold the registered owner accountable. One thing I wanted to add about that is, so we believe there's potentially some people out there who may come to you and they say, hey, I'll take that RV off your hands for $100.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, you take it and then you leave it on the street for us to pick up. And now we start going to the registered owners. We get maybe five or six saying, well, hey, there's this guy. I called this number, I put it on the internet, and this guy came and took my RV. So this really needs a lot of investigative work to go track down, okay, you sold it to who, and they did what, and then go try to find these people. It's going to be almost like not asking for detectives. We need someone to go from beginning to end and find out how it got to the street and where it is today.
And I just want to make sure I'm following what you're saying there. So there's some speculation that some of the tents we're seeing on the streets of Portland are put out there by advocates and that no one's actually sleeping on those. I've never actually seen any data on that, but there's okay. a speculation that's occurring. You're saying there's people out there buying RVs for $100 and then parking them on Foster Road, or is there economic interest there?
Maybe I should back up a little bit. So what I see happening is so that someone would give me money to take the RV off of their hands.
Oh, okay. Got it.
I get the money and then I take it out and leave it on the street.
I see. Your positioning is a service you're providing to someone who's got an old
right,
RV.
Right. I'll take the RV off your hands, just okay. hand it so to me. I'll go. Yeah. There was one in Washington County that came out. They found out this guy went and got paid for this mobile home or motor home, whatever it is. And he just went and dropped it in a school parking lot or something like that. They ended up tracking that person down.
Got it. Makes a perfect sense. Well, in doing that detective work, I think, you know, there's the education piece, but we really are in a metro area where, you know, the border between Clackamas County or the border
Washington
between
County,
Portland
yeah.
and
yeah.
Gresham is indecipherable to most people driving. And so I think we just might think about what we can do with some of our, you know, partners in other cities and other counties on how we really communicate about this, how we have a kind of a consistent approach, because yeah, you don't know when you're leaving Portland and going to Gresham
right.
and much less in, well, it depends, but it would depend into Clackamas County. And it I can just see this stuff flowing across those lines all the time.
Yeah. And I think I've mentioned this briefly earlier. That is sort of our next step. So once we're done here as Skylar kind of said, this work is ongoing. It's been going since, you know, Commissioner said we first sort of sat up in the saddle in PBOT, and it's going to continue. And so our next step here, my goal for the next couple of months is to start pulling VIN data on vehicles that actually go through our system, start determining where those vehicles are coming from. So that's probably going to require some work with DMV. And then we can start to develop an understanding of the last, at least at the very least, the last registered owner, where those folks are located. So we're seeing, like I said earlier, where are these vehicles coming from? What are the inroads to an RV, you know, going from, you know, someone's driveway to winding up on Marine Drive?
I'd love to see the data as it comes. One last question on the state law potential changes. You know, there's a lot of attention right now on House Bill 3115, deservedly so. There's a whole progeny, though, of kind of related statutes. We've got our notice statute and we've got the RV statute. I've actually had conflicting feedback on how much of an impediment the RV statute is. Are we seeing that as a driver of material cost? I mean, I've never gotten really a clear answer on this either from law enforcement. I've even had some of the conversations with the DA's office, and I can't really land on this, get clarity on this one.
So I think there are some elements there that we can stand to clarify. I think one is that if you're driving around those small, tiny houses on wheels, are argued to fit the definition of an RV. And so Mike and his team usually have to go then get a flatbed truck to get those out. It's fairly resource intensive, mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, just taking it away in a junk hauler, as it were. So I think clarity in terms of how these things are defined would be welcome to the space. Is it the magic bullet? Probably not. But I think, as we've said, it's all about incremental steps. How do we empower the folks who have been doing this work over the last several years to continue to make that progress, and also looking for, you know, any new avenues so where we can continue to support this work?
So I'm going to repeat back what I think I understand, because I want to make sure I follow. So yes. We see these like mobile homes that are built.
Little houses on caster wheels, essentially.
Yeah, I see it all the time on my bike ride.
Oh, yeah.
And those are arguably could meet the definition of an RV under the state law. It would help to clarify that they're not. Is that
city code? So I consulted with the city attorney. And so the tiny home is used for overnight accommodations, and it can be pulled or drawn upon a road. So it becomes an RV.
So under
city code, yes.
Yeah. Can we change city code?
That's on the list. Please
change city code. I just wanted to make sure on the statute side, there's a lot of attention to House Bill 3115. We've got to get that repealed or changed. But there's these two related statutes, and we would probably be in our best interest to kind of approach them all together.
And I think you're touching on a very important issue, is that there's a lot of this that does live at the state level. And so our conversations that we're having with Portland Solutions between our office and the mayor's team are also not only how do we address things at the city level, but what are our priorities legislatively next year so that we can give OGR some really clear marching orders for the next legislative session to, like I said, you know, make our lives a little bit easier here.
I'm very happy to partner on city code. We'll take care of that as well as working on our OGR agenda. Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it.
Commissioner Ryan, thanks for your patience as we have a conversation that clearly we've been wanting to have for some time. So could you explain to me right now, what is the practice? So after someone reports the incident, say several RVs near their business, they give us lots of information about what appears to be illegal activity going on. Their employees feel threatened. These are the stories we all hear.
Right.
And so I want to know from you what the practice is. I've heard various reports. I think it's like a mile, but tell me.
Oh, yeah. When they have to move.
Yeah.
So what happens is, so we get a report of a large camp. I usually discuss it with my street service coordination center partners. You know, the police, impact reduction, and Lucas talk about, hey, when can we get this on the calendar? So I get it on the calendar. And I think that Skyder mentioned that my calendar is much more full than Lucas's. So we find a place for me to get my staff out there.
No, I've seen the map.
Bad
for you.
It's okay. No, I have a wonderful job.
Yeah.
And so what we do is we then go out and we knock on the door and let folks know we're tagging the camps. We put a green sticker on the RV. And we say we're coming back in 7 days. If it's still here, we'll tow it. And we let them know that if we're to avoid a tow, you have to move at least 1 mile away. And
anywhere, just 1 mile?
Just 1 mile away. What we're trying to get them, it's almost consistent with Lucas tries to get his people to move 600 feet. We get our RVs to move 1 mile because you can drive an RV a lot faster and you can pick up your tent and move it 600 feet. So it's kind of consistent. 600 feet walking is about 1 mile in an RV. And so what'll happen is we'll go out there, we'll arrive on that seventh day, the Tuesday, and we'll say, okay, you have 1 hour to go. We have a requirement to give them 1 hour to get their stuff and leave. If they can't get it to move, then we tow it. And during all this time, the first contact, and even this contact, we're asking if they would want shelter or some other place to go.
Thank you for reminding us of that.
Yeah, that's huge to us. We have that access to get folks into there. And many folks turn us down. And then we end up taking their RV and it gets towed over to Giles Lake and it ages out, stays there for 30 days. And after 30 days, if it's not claimed, then it's eligible to go to rapid response for destruction.
Right. So they've moved a mile.
Right.
And is there any regular, do we monitor that or?
We do pay attention. Okay. If we find that folks aren't moving the mile, we'll go back, hey, you got to get going. Because we're trying to give an area a relief. Of some of this stuff, relief of the camping. And most folks, you know, I don't say most, maybe I could probably most actually move like we ask them to, but then they repopulate another camp. And then the process starts all over again. We have many people that have many green stickers on them. And they move from this spot, then they go 1 mile, 2 miles away, and the process starts all over again.
Yeah, and then the one that I'm thinking about that I've become close to, they move back.
Oh, yeah. Then after a while, yep, they go. So we have a posting date. We give them 72 hours at the minimum. And we have to, if we go more than 10 days, let's say we get inclement weather, it gets hot, it expires after 10 days. And we got to come back and re-warn if it goes more than 10 days after the original warning. Similar to Lucas. So, you know, we tag, we wait for 7 days, we tow. But if we go beyond 10, we got to re-tag the camp again, just like Lucas does.
And I'm proud, again, to be on a council that's actually focused on services.
Yeah.
So when we take them somewhere, there actually is hope for these people to get services and to build their agency and have a better life. I mean, that's always going to be the goal. And right now, we don't have enough places to take people. Is that true?
Yeah. Oh, that is true, actually.
That's where I think the longer conversation needs to be. Like, we need to have the conversation, like, where is that temporary place where they could go? Because I can only imagine after they move 1 mile, then we start getting calls from that neighborhood.
Correct.
And then they boomerang back to where they were.
Correct.
And so this is the big issue. And I think Commissioner Gonzalez brought up a good point about our boundaries with other jurisdictions, kind of like what I said on the time, place, and manner. Until we start aligning our practices mm-hmm. with the borders of Gresham, with the borders of Beaverton, local government isn't really thinking about this in a systemic way that might actually see some real results. Mm-hmm. So this is fine and it's incremental. And I'm glad we're having the conversation clearly because it's been mm-hmm. needed and wanted. And so, and I thank you and your team so much for your hard work.
Welcome.
So I will be supportive of this, but I'm glad we raised this as a really important dialogue that we need to keep diving into. And hopefully we can bring our county partners along on this. And more importantly, the practices with our neighboring jurisdictions. Because right now, this boomerang yo-yo thing is not fair to the people who are living here.
I appreciate that, Commissioner. Thank you so much for raising that. I think also it's important to understand that the package of code updates in front of us today is one item, and there's been a lot of work that's gotten us to this point. The official process is not the only way that an RV is taken off the street. And I could sit up here for probably the next hour and tell you about all the things that we've been working on to try to find roads for us to be able, no pun intended.
We just didn't have a chance to do briefings. And that's okay.
Yeah, let's.
And I realize I'm doing legislative creep at the moment, but I'm also talking about what the real issue is that everyone in Portland realizes. So it's important
that
we take this moment
agree.
Of time to talk it out.
Okay. I completely agree. Okay. So yeah, I think more than welcome to spend some time with any office that would like. Maybe there's a work session or something where we can kind of run through how we got to this point, our plans for the next 6 months, and really how we solve the problems that we're seeing.
Commissioner Rubio.
Thank you. And thank you, Commissioner Ryan, for bringing those points up. I fully agree. And that was going to be my question as well. Mm-hmm. This is a great incremental step, but we do need to connect it to services. And I did hear from my staff that had the briefing with you. Can you tell me a little bit more, folks who do need to seek support to find ways to get their car impounded out, what is the avenue for that? I just want to lift it up to the public.
Of course, yeah. Thank you so much, Commissioner Rubio. So they'll have access to something called the Towing Hardship Fund, and that is within PBOT. So it's something that we set up in the last several months. And that is if your vehicle is towed by the city and you are on SNAP, WIC, TAMF, even if you are a student receiving financial aid, you can make a case to the city and we will cover up to $300, which under a normal towing circumstance would cover more than the amount of cost associated with a tow. So you'd be able to show up and get your vehicle back at no cost to you if you are like genuinely on the margins.
Great. Thank you for that. And I'm hoping that we can make that elevated so that the public has access and knows how to.
Absolutely. Yeah, we include that in information in all of our outreach documents.
Great. So before we get to public testimony, do we have public testimony on this item?
We do. We have
three people. Before we get there, apparently there was a typo in the amendment I read, and I don't want legal counsel to be angry at me. So I'm going to, if there's no objection to my seconder, which was Commissioner Mapps, I would like to withdraw my amendment and put forward a different amendment.
Sure.
And if you can tell which word is changed, you get extra credit. So the amendment that I'd like to move, I move to amend Exhibit A to add park ranger supervisor to the list of officers in section 16.30.100 authorized by the city council by city code who may order a vehicle towed or relocated as provided in this title. Now I have a second.
Second.
Thank you. That is the new amendment. Okay, public testimony.
First, we have Sunday Castell.
Welcome. Are they here or?
Hey, Sunday was to be in person. Looks like they're not here.
Nope.
Next, we have Frank Badams. Frank is online.
Good morning, Frank.
Okay, can you guys hear me now?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, my turn?
Yep. Go ahead, Frank.
Okay, well, thanks to all the commissioners. I want to thank Mike Krebb for getting rid of the red car and Mr. Mapps, or Commissioner Mapps' office, and Jackson. My concern today is a trail on the Columbia Slough from 158th to Marine Drive. I started reporting a van when it was white and had windows a year and a half ago. And it is still there. It's probably because it's on private property on an easement. I have went through PDX Reporter, BES, 311, code enforcement, park rangers, BES throughout the last year and a half. And the van is still there. It's a rusted vehicle now with no windows. You know, 3 months after I reported the first time, it was set on fire. This slough trail is part city property, part private property. And these two vehicles, I just can't get anything done about it. And, like I said, Mike got rid of one of the cars that was on city property. So that part's done. And I'm at a loss as to what to do about this trail, because it used to be a beautiful trail. It was cleaned up. This is on the opposite side of Four Corners, on the other side of the slough. Earlier this year, they cleaned up from Marine Drive to almost where I'm talking about, but they didn't go far enough, probably because of private property. Although where they did clean up, that is also private property. So they were able to get something done. I'm just at a loss as to what to do. And when you complain to 311 or PDX Reporter, the complaint goes in. If you give them your email, you'll get an email confirmation of it, and that's it. There's no way to track your complaint. And it would be nice if there was a way to do that. This van and a little Honda CRV, they're both rusted piles of junk in an abandoned campsite. And I don't know what to do. It's just, it's just there. So maybe this new towing procedure will help be able to get things off of private property, or give the park rangers, more authority to get the vehicle moved. Because I've also reported this through to the park rangers. And I just hate to see this natural area go back to what Four Corners was. Four Corners, I walked in that yesterday, and there's nobody camped in it. It's starting to recover. but this is on the other side of the slough, and it's just going to get a mess. And I mean, that's all. And that's it for me.
All right. And Frank, thank you, but don't go away. I think there's a couple of comments here. Commissioner Mapps.
Sure. Frank, thanks for testifying today. I wonder to provide either Jackson or Krebs an opportunity. Do we have a response to them? I understand the private property thing can be complicated. Is there an easy answer? And if not, I'll just ask someone, either Priya or Jackson, to get back to.
What I'll do, I'll bring it up to the SSCC.
Okay.
And I'll talk with Lucas. Lucas is pretty darn good with his maps, find out who owns it. So let me work on this. And I think I have Frank's phone number.
Okay.
They're in it's a New Jersey company that owns it.
All right. And Frank, one more comment coming up. Go ahead, Sky.
Yeah, just more for public information too. I think if it's on private property, we do have to have police trespass. So we will try to do our best to contact the private property owner, which we have been successful in a number of locations. But I just want folks to know that we cannot just go on private property and remove folks, unfortunately. So we need to have police to actually trespass those individuals.
Skylar, related to this, could you also mention the work that you and Hank have been doing around the dashboard?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have developed a dashboard within Portland Solutions and in partnership with PBOT to actually show the vehicles reported, abandoned autos and RVs, lived-in vehicles, as well as what's been removed and destroyed. And it's actually broken out by neighborhood. So folks will be able to kind of share what work has been done in their neighborhood and what we're seeing across the city and across different districts. So it's something we are planning to share kind of in our problem solver meetings as well.
Great. And I just want to acknowledge colleagues, similar to the work that Sky did to create our own dashboard project for our city shelter sites, Hank Smith from my office has developed this dashboard. So we don't need to go out and buy fancy dashboards or apps or software. We can actually develop these in-house. And you've got two experts in-house who can help you do this now and into the future. Commissioner Mapps, then Frank again.
I still have... Frank, I can't see. Is he still on? Frank, one of the things I did want to say, you talked about Big Four Corners and you gave us an eyewitness account that it looks pretty good. Really glad to hear that. And colleagues, I will tell you, I remember working with many folks throughout the city to try to get that space cleaned up. Incredibly challenging. I almost think of the ordinance before us today as being perhaps one of the biggest things that's happened in the city in this space since Big Four Corners. So the testimony I'm hearing today is just a reminder of the incredible work that's happened in this space. And it's challenging. I can recall.
Great. Frank, you get the last word on this.
Yeah.
Well, one other thing, the private property issue, I actually went through code enforcement and reported a code violation for that easement. And they went out there later on. I found out that it was deemed unfounded. I gave them specific instructions on to go look at the trail on the easement. And I'm pretty sure they probably didn't. They probably just went to the property, looked at the warehouse, and didn't see what I was talking about. You know, I don't know. There's no way for me to know, find out, though. And that's part of the problem. We All can't
right. Well, we'll let Mike follow up with you. He's a genius. He solves every problem. And undoubtedly, he'll solve this one for you, too, Frank. And we appreciate your testifying today. Thank you. Next individual, please.
Jared Essig.
Jared, welcome.
Jared.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor Wheeler, commissioners, citizens of Portland, and public employees of the Towing Bureau, Towing and Portland Bureau of Transportation. As one of these semi-nomadic individuals vehicularly housed in a Honda Element now, I have the distinct privilege of being able to temporarily blend in with the bourgeois, at least for long enough to deliver my report before the public bodies that deliberate the questions with which I am constantly faced. Disposition of inappropriately parked vehicles. Now, City Code 16.20.170 prohibits the storing of property on the street. That's what I deal with as a registered and licensed owner. So I'm going to speak to that, although this other question of unlicensed vehicles is very much important. Now, the Los Angeles Bureau of Transportation has victimized me multiple times, and that's how I became, after the third time my vehicle getting towed, I became basically a much bigger problem for the city of Los Angeles than I had been before, and cost them a lot more money just moving me around from, tent to tent, campsite to campsite. And that's how I became a homeless, service-resistant schizophrenic and a basically public servant. And depending on how you want to call it, I also became a Jewish proselyte after I ended up in the ghetto of Pico Robertson. So you can thank them for helping me improve my decorum and try not to send them into exile again. By the way, thank you, Mayor Wheeler and the council for your moral and intellectual leadership on dealing with the Palestinian occupation of Portland State University. But we need more on that issue. Now, the point is, we could any one of us end up in exile on Main Street. And you should start thinking about that yourselves. Like, what would I do if I were in that situation? Like, Commissioner Ryan is saying, where are these people going to go? You tell them to move a mile away and from their RV, but where do I go after that mile? It just continues to be a problem for the city. So I've learned recently that you have safe rest villages for vehicles at Sunderland and St. John's, and I'll be visiting those sometime. And also the equivalent facilities in Seattle and Eugene and other opportunity zones where I plan my trade. But I want to say that to dismantle a vehicle for $87 a linear foot, you could just create a sanctioned trailer park or sanctioned modular housing and just pay houseless people like half that amount to remediate it and to turn it into a temporary transitional shelter. You know, that seems like a good idea to me. Also, to requiring to recover an abandoned vehicle, you should allow them to repay the tow with community service instead of just with money, because people might not have money, but they might be willing to do community service.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Actually like that.
That concludes testimony.
All right. Very good. Colleagues, any further questions or thoughts before we call the roll on the two amendments and then potentially an amended ordinance? Please call the roll on Wheeler 1, which includes the Parks Ranger Supervisor.
Gonzalez.
Aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Yes, much appreciated. Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. That amendment passes to Commissioner Maps' amendment to make this an emergency ordinance. Call the roll.
Gonzalez.
Aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. This is now an emergency ordinance. Please call the roll on the ordinance as amended.
Gonzalez.
Aye.
Maps.
I want to thank staff at the mayor's office, PBOT, the city attorney's office, and Jackson in particular in my office for bringing this work forward. This is a great example of public policy. It took a long time to get here. Deeply appreciative of the work that you've done. I vote aye.
Rubio.
I want to appreciate Commissioner Maps for your years of work on this, and Jackson as well for your great work. And also the PBOT team, who's been really on the front line of this as well. I'm also glad to learn that there are avenues for connecting those in need to resources where available. These changes are measured and important steps forward. I vote aye.
Ryan.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner Maps, again, for bringing this forward. It's really been overdue, and I appreciate you and Jackson on your team working on this since you had the assignment. And thank you, Mayor Wheeler and Sky, for connecting the dots and having this be a part of the system that we've spent a lot of time and money improving over the last few years. So I can see where the dots are connecting. We started on this issue a few years ago. And I also want to acknowledge how important it was to include parks. They do steward a big part of our right-of-way. And so I'm glad that we knew to add that emergency amendment to this emergency ordinance. And I look forward to progress updates on this issue. I thought I want to thank you for dealing with the dialogue that I was instigating. This is a very complex issue. And although we're handling something very important, we have to look at it on the bigger picture of practices. And I look forward to those updates. I look forward to how we're coordinating, especially with our partners at Gresham in the East Border. It's on all of us to help beautify our city, keep people safe, and take care of our property. It's a beautiful place, Portland, Oregon, if we treat it right. I vote aye.
Wheeler.
Just a couple of comments here. First of all, thank you everybody who has worked on this tirelessly over many years. I want to acknowledge that this issue was first addressed in a large scale basis back in 2017. Commissioner Saltzman, who was then PBOT commissioner, along with the remainder of the council, myself included. Mike, I think you were there as well. Not quite. You were at the police bureau. And the police bureau actually was a participant, and we created the first site for addressing this issue. This issue actually blew up in 2015, 2016. And that's when the public started to really take notice. The council started to take notice. And what we very quickly found out was this is an extremely complicated issue. And I appreciate the conversation that we had this morning because it highlights that. It addresses hazmat issues, the cost of disposing of unclaimed RVs can be exorbitant. There is state statute involved, and I want to remind people that we already got a significant compromise out of the legislature related to this issue when they helped us with the transfer laws, which were far too permissive. There's, of course, disposal rules that we must comply with. And to Commissioner Ryan's point, which I think is a really good one, the task site that we are working very, very hard to get open is actually focused on RV tenants. And we're working through DEQ and a couple of other issues there, but we expect to have that site open pretty soon. But we will need to move at scale to address this. And as we heard from Frank, who testified, while it is important for us to keep our eye on the ball in terms of long-term support and help for people in the RVs, the neighborhoods are absolutely at wit's end about the condition of these vehicles, the threat that these vehicles create to the environment, to the safety, public health in the community. And we do have an affirmative responsibility to continue to move forward and work hard on this issue. And I'm really glad that we have this collaborative effort and a unanimously supportive council. I vote aye. And the ordinance is adopted as amended. Thank you. 707, please read it. I'm going to pull it back.
Accept bid of $9,387,320 from Moore Excavation Inc. for the Lombard Pump Station and Force Main Upgrade Project.
Colleagues, I'm pulling this back to my office. And with that, we are adjourned.